Rapiophile. Noun. One who is attracted to intelligence. Join us, fellow fun-loving lover of knowledge, as we dig into your favorite topics with our very own nerdy diatribes, words of wisdom, and takes on life as millennials. Welcome to the Sapiophiles. All right, welcome back. Happy 2020. Can't believe it's 2020. That sounds like the future.
It does sound like the future.
I saw a thing somebody posted a couple days ago that we're now closer to New Year's Day 2050 than New Year's Day 1990.
Yeah, that one kind of hurt my soul a little bit.
I'm like,
I also saw one that I guess there's like a Friends quote where they're making a video for, I believe it's, is it Emma, I think?
Emma, yeah. For her like 18th birthday?
Yeah, and Chandler makes mention of 2020.
Yeah, well, he was like, Emma's sleeping a lot.
Yeah.
Did you have a nice nap? Now it's 2020.
Yeah, I hope you're still enjoying your nap. Like, it's really funny.
But she tweeted it, that actress. Did you see that?
No.
The girl who played Emma, who is now like 20 years old or something. Or maybe 18. I don't know. She's around that age. Right. Emma was supposed to be 18, but she might be a little bit of a different age. She was like, happy 2020. Had a nice nap.
I love it. But in any case, it is 2020. We're now in the roaring 20s again.
I'm excited. That 20s just sound so much fun.
They do sound fun.
It's going to be a good decade.
It is. Let's be positive about this. Right here, right now.
2020. You know what? We're starting this decade in such a better place than we started the last decade.
True.
You know, I feel like I'm in a good zone. I think you're in a good zone.
Yeah, definitely.
So lots of good things coming up. But, you know, we also think it's important to take a look back at how we got here.
We do. And one of the things that, I guess, one of the topics that Chelsea so, I guess, creatively decided to put forth as a topic for this particular episode is what we learned from books that we read in high school.
Or we're supposed to read.
Or we were supposed to read in high school. Or we wish we had.
Sometimes people don't read the books, but.
I mean, I read all the books, but. Yes.
But I think even if you didn't go through all these books, there's still some lessons that we can pull out of them.
Absolutely. And I think that it's interesting to look back on the lessons now, because I feel as though a lot of the high school reading that we did because, and it's always harder to read something when someone's telling you have to read it. It's always harder to do anything when someone's telling you you have to.
And a lot of the lessons don't sink in when you're 16. Like, it doesn't make sense yet. You haven't been there.
Right. And I think one of the best things I've done is I've gone back and read some of these books again as an adult, and they're so much better. And I glean so much more from their pages and their words than I did when I was in high school. But I feel as though even the words that we read in high school, even if we didn't totally maybe our understanding, we could read them, we could understand what they were saying, but maybe we didn't truly understand like themes and like comprehend just how important they were until we look back at them now. So
yeah, it's funny. Yeah, because when you revisit things that you read, or even things you've like seen, like movies and TV shows and things like that as kids, it's an entirely different experience. Like, I kind of sometimes I put on things that I've seen a lot in the background while I'm doing things. You know, like Netflix shows and stuff.
Same.
So two examples of things that sometimes I put on in the background are like Gilmore Girls or One Tree Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those shows have teenage characters and 30-somethings.
Right.
At least in the early seasons, the older characters in One Tree Hill kind of fade away as the series goes on. But like the pilot of Gilmore Girls, Lorelai is 32. Now, when I saw the pilot of Gilmore Girls the first time, I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
So I paid much more attention to Rory, but now it's like, oh, I get what she's doing. And the same thing, like, I recently rewatched a little bit of the early One Tree Hill, and I'm like, Karen, I get you, girl.
Right? Yeah.
But, like, I never paid attention to her. I was like, oh, well, Peyton has drama. So, you know, it's, you see things differently. Just based on where you are in your life. And that, I think that applies to when we take a look back at books that we read at that time. And, you know, it's good that we're exposed to them at that age, but I think they might be better served if we read them as adults.
Right. And I think a lot of what we did as far as reading them when we were in high school was in order to, for lack of a better word, and I apologize for the word, but regurgitate the information in order to pass, you know, mm-hmm. write a certain essay, take a pop quiz, take the SAT or, you know, some other test like the MCAS for Massachusetts, for example. But I think you really come to a much bigger appreciation for what the characters meant to you, and how things were portrayed thematically and what the setting really meant and how important that was to a novel or a short story or novella. And I just love thinking about that. And I think that some of the lessons that we learn reading these books in high school frequently, maybe they're always inside of us, but we don't realize it until, you know, something clicks when we're adults and we're like, oh, that thing that I read.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to take a look back at high school reading list. Don't worry if you haven't read all of these. It should be accessible for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what we can pull out of those now as adults looking back and what hopefully you guys can take out of it too. Because it's now, not counting grad school, been a full decade since we've been out of college.
Oh my gosh. It's our 10-year reunion this year.
I know. What? So, you know, we can't forget. We can't forget the things that we read when we were younger.
Yes.
We can't remember them either. I don't remember anything.
I think what's interesting for me is that there are some books that I've read. I mean, Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, for example, that I don't remember exactly all of the plot points to that. But looking back, I know exactly what the main conflict or antagonist in the book was. And I still remember feeling that it was a book that was so important. And I think Chelsea and I were talking about this before we started with this podcast, but like that it was one of those that made you feel uncomfortable in a good way because it made you think about your life and how someone in the novel fits, like how would that person react to your choices, to your life? How is your life different than the person you're reading about? How privileged are you versus that person? What would your life look like if you lived in that person's shoes? So I think that's so cool.
It is. All right. So do we want to talk about certain lessons or certain books?
I loved you. And I took some notes and I have some just generalized lessons that I can certainly speak to. And I know that you can certainly speak to books that really, really hammered those lessons home.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I just kind of tried to think in a general sense about the things that I was able to take away and the things that now looking back with my adult mind, the things that really were truly imperative lessons that I took from these books that I took with me through college and beyond, personally and professionally.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So I also should add that if you haven't read all the books on this list, on occasion, I will be saying something about a book, and I'm sure Chelsea will as well, that would be a spoiler. So,
to some extent, yeah. I don't think we're going to give the climax of any of the books away.
So if I do say something or I decide I want to say something, I will say spoiler alert at first. So you can always...
You can skip ahead a couple minutes.
Fast forward, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I have a long list. I'm still writing things down of books that I think affected my experience of reading in high school.
Mm-hmm. I guess to start off, and, you know, Chelsea, definitely jump in here and let me know what books made this impression on you. But for me, the top of my list for things that I learned from books I read in high school is that I gained a better understanding of history and how people lived, interacted, struggled, et cetera, at different times and in different places. So,
for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of historical fiction and things that are just set in different times and places.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that is one of the big things that they want you to understand at that point in time. I don't know that it's necessarily specific things about like one time and place, but perhaps the themes that carry through different eras.
Absolutely. And not only that, but I feel as though I enjoyed history better when I was reading literature.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for example, like The Grapes of Wrath. Because you're able to connect to certain characters within the novel, you're able to then put yourself in the shoes of someone who lived during that time.
For sure.
It certainly is a huge empathy builder as well. And it makes history come alive because in books, I feel you connect, or at least I connect with characters in a big way. And mm-hmm. I think that has played a huge role in how much I have a general understanding of history and just the importance of the past in general.
For sure. Like taking a look at this list, some of the ones that I think I get a real sense of like the time and the things that happened in that time and place.
Mm-hmm.
Mockingbird for sure.
Of course.
A lot of the Shakespeare ones.
Mm-hmm.
Gatsby.
Yeah. I mean, Slaughterhouse-Five is a big one. Yeah,
for sure. Pride and Prejudice, that's a very
mm-hmm.
specific time and place. Gone with the Wind.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that are sort of like in a futuristic dystopian time too that I really enjoy that setting as well. Things like 1984, which
oh, yes.
I love 1984.
I love 1984.
Just Orwell in general.
Oh, yeah.
So great. 1984, I actually got a chance to see the Broadway production a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which they did a fantastic job with. But, you know, for it being a futuristic thing, and if we take a look at what those lessons actually are, they're not that futuristic anymore. And I think that would even be more relevant now for kids than it was for us. Because the whole, like, Big Brother is watching you thing. Like, they are.
Oh.
They can see what you're doing. They're, 100%. Your phone is listening to you. Your computer is listening to you. Your TV is listening to you. Alexa knows what you're doing. So does Siri.
Oh, yes. And if you don't believe us, then just look at all the ads that pop up on Facebook.
Oh, my God. So things. Facebook ads. I have a thing to say about Facebook ads. I get that it's your algorithms or something, but it's a little little bit generalized because mm-hmm. I feel like Facebook did a thing. It's like, hey, see that you've been in a relationship for a couple months. Here's all the ads for diamond rings and lingerie.
Yeah, that's insane.
Everything suddenly turned into diamond rings and lingerie. And I'm like, dude, I have other interests, Facebook.
No.
Like, yeah, I'm happy about my relationship. It's great. I like really very happy about it. That doesn't mean you need to sell me diamond rings and lingerie because I now have no other interests.
Yeah, this is the same thing happened, not as humorous, but I mean, I've been doing a lot of races and I've been doing marathon training. And then also in this past year, I had, because we're going to do real talk human here, I had like an awful time with my complexion earlier mm-hmm. in the fall. And so like now the only ads that are popping up on Facebook are, you know, like how to clear your face and how to run a race. So it's like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But
anyway, but yeah, so aside from their kind of humorous ad generator, they do know, like your computer is keeping track of things that you type, it's keeping track of things that you say.
Mm-hmm.
Big Brother is watching.
Yes.
Big so that's not watching. That far off. Like if somebody wanted to find out what you do by yourself in your house, they probably could.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as we're aware of that, you know, that's one thing. But I think that a lot of these futuristic stories, they're much closer to home than we realize.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's keeping our eyes open to those things. Because another thing with everything being internet is like anybody can put things on the internet. So things like the whole 2 + 2 = 5.
Yeah.
Like people can convince you of things that are not true because they can make a nice little website. Like just watch what you're reading and watch what you're listening yeah. to and where are you getting your information? Because that is kind of the world. Like, you know, you read that book now and it's like, ooh.
Well, I think that's perfect. I mean, the quote that I took from 1984 that I decided to notate in my notes was, "Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past." And I think that's like so chilling and so true.
Yeah.
And we are in an era where people can really distort the present and in many ways make the past something that even if it is vital that we don't ignore it, that people want to ignore it. So it's just so interesting.
And even like things that are happening now, like news stories, if mm-hmm. you take a look at how people are interpreting them and how they post about them, there are drastically different interpretations of the same event.
Right.
And that happens all the time. It's happening now with news stories.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of how are people twisting and distorting things and who are you trusting and where are you getting your information from? And like, are you cross-referencing your information? Because it would be very easy to get sucked down a hole if you're only getting information from one source that may be slanted. Or just your friend's interpretation of like, oh, my friend read this headline and then they posted this, which is only partially true. And then I took that and posted this, which is now even further from true.
Mm-hmm.
So just being aware of where you're getting your information. It's not like the newspaper comes to your doorstep anymore and that's like the official news.
Yeah. It's interesting, scary, interesting. But
so yeah, like how real is 1984?
I know, right?
Took a little longer than 1984 to get there, but.
It's true, but still.
So just, you know, keeping your eyes open.
Right.
And that's a huge lesson from that. And that type of literature in general.
Oh, dystopian literature.
Like, there are newer ones. There are newer dystopian literatures that we didn't really read in high school that I love. Like things like Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was after we were in high school. But that's kind of a similar idea.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what is the government feeding you?
And I loved reading 1984 when I was in school, but I also love the fact that dystopian literature has kind of become a pervasive thing in young adult fiction as well. So not just fiction that we are told to read as young adults, but also fiction that's created for young adults. So I think that's mm-hmm. really cool too.
Yeah. And the thing with a lot of the high school reading books, they're not really YA books.
No.
They are not at all. I mean, occasionally they might give you a YA book, but like really by the time you're in high school, they're giving you adult literature.
Mm-hmm.
Like technically speaking, the reading levels, I mean, there are reading levels above it, but like the ones for the purposes of teaching and getting kids up to level really stop at eighth grade.
Right.
Like you should be done learning reading level by eighth grade, officially. People aren't necessarily, but when they're having you track students learning, it's the like, it depends on which system you're using. But if you're using like the A to Z system, it's one of the reading leveling systems. It correlates to a lot of other Lexile systems and other ones as well, which I like that one because it has more like small increments. You should hit Z by eighth grade. It's not 12th grade, it's 8th. So high school is adult literature, which we don't realize. And honestly, when you think about your mindset as somebody who is like 15 years old, sure, you can read that and you can understand it on a basic level, but can you connect to those themes? Like, can you connect to what that's like?
Yeah, it's that was always very interesting. And I think that some of the books that are written in such a way, for example, Night by Elie Wiesel is
that book,
is one that I remember reading very young.
I think I read that freshman year.
Yeah, I did too. And it's beautifully written and it's so important. But I feel like that's one of the first books in school that I was told to read that, like, it truly hit me. Like, I understood it not just on the level that, like, this is what happened, but, like, in my soul. you know what I mean? Like, I remember sobbing reading that book.
That was one of the first books that, because it was upsetting me and because I was not processing it well.
Right.
That was one of the first books that I sort of read the beginning of the chapter and then read the Cliff's Notes.
Yeah, it was. It
because was... I had a hard time with it emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it was freshman year.
Right.
Maybe if you give it to seniors.
Well, I
it would be better.
I feel like freshman year is just filled with books. Like we had Night of Mice and Men and The Red Pony. Like,
it's right?
Like, do you want to make us cry this entire year? I feel like a lot of what we read freshman year was just so sad.
And kids are really vulnerable. Like, they're still kids. I get that they can read it. There's a difference between can you read it and are you ready to read it?
Right. And I think that there were even other books, like even as I got to junior year, where, I mean, there it's obviously very important to read books like Beloved by Toni Morrison and Maya Angelou's I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. But there's stuff in there, not that students shouldn't be reading it, and not that I'm not saying it should be banned by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, there's no banned books ever, by the way. I don't
believe Yeah, don't do books. That. Don't do that. If anybody's listening, don't do that.
She made a very angry face just
then. But I also feel as though I went back and read those books after because my teenage self didn't truly grasp everything, or it wasn't ready for it yet. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And I think that's – which kind of segues into one of the things I wrote down is something that I learned. And I think I learned it and understood it reading these books because I recognized that maybe I got these things intellectually, but I didn't truly understand them, is that there's a difference between intellect and wisdom. And that
– Oh, yeah.
And that as you grow older and wiser – you come to understand these things in such a bigger way than you did when you were a child or, you know, a young adult, a teen. So
for real. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even like what I would, like I was saying before, some of the newer ones, things like Divergent. Mm-hmm. Now that was published in 2011.
Right.
Loved it. But in 2011, I was 23.
Right.
So that's a little different than somebody reading it at 14.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one that I think often now is a book that teens are reading.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's just, it's very, because you can read something doesn't mean that you're emotionally ready to read it. And you are awesome in that you went back and reread them. The sad part is I think a lot of people struggled the first time because they weren't ready and didn't go back.
And I think that's something that's truly it's certainly a criticism of our education system. And it's mm-hmm. that, you know, these books are important and they should be read. But are they really are we at a level where we can truly appreciate how important they are when we're 14 through 18? I mean, I think I would have been so much better suited reading some of the ones I read freshman and sophomore year as a senior, not because I couldn't read or understand them, but because I couldn't understand them. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't.
There are different levels. There's,
yeah.
There's baseline comprehension. Mm-hmm. Then there's inferential comprehension. And then there is being able to connect to it enough to let it sink in. And you might be able to do all of those things up to a certain point. But if you haven't had certain experiences in life, things aren't going to hit you the same way.
Right.
And it also feels foreign. Things that happen where it's like, okay, adults do it. When you read that at 14, you read something about an adult. Like 30 sounds like, whoa, that's, I can't even process 30. That's so old.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then like you go back and like you look back when you are that age and it's like, oh, it's really not that different. It's not that far. I mean, okay, it is very different than being 14, but it's not like such a foreign thing that you shouldn't be able to grasp it. So it just feels like such a different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the more experiences you have, the more you can kind of process all different phases of life.
And it's really relevant and important that you said that because I feel like, you know, going back and having read these books another time, I think about all the times that, I mean, especially as I'm going to give a shout out to our old Myers-Briggs episode as an ENTJ, ENFJ, depending on the day, but a J, as a 14, 15, 16, 17 year old, I read a lot of the antagonists in books as just true antagonists. I couldn't, you know, that's how I saw everything. And now going back and reading these as an adult, you understand that there's a backstory to everyone, and that sometimes evil is born, and sometimes evil is made, and that, like, sometimes people aren't truly evil, they're desperate or they're hopeless, and that can, like, drive a lot of plots and characters and how they interact with each other and how they interact with society. And I think that that's something you just don't get when you're young.
Yeah.
No,
you really don't. There's a reason for everybody's story.
Mm-hmm.
It came from somewhere. No one is just magically evil.
Right.
If they are quote unquote evil, something put them in that situation where you are now perceiving it to be evil.
Right. Exactly. No, 100% true.
You know, I almost think that perhaps if high school literature was structured more like, let's pick the ones that are more accessible thematically and emotionally. Like, pick some good ones. There are tons. There's tons on this high school reading list. Pick mm-hmm. some good ones there. And then do more, like, choice YA books instead of, like, let's cram all the good literature in. I think that would make more kids who actually want to go pick up more books. I think a lot of times people who are like, yeah, I don't really read much after school is because these books, just because you can read them and you can, like, regurgitate the information and comprehend on that level,
mm-hmm.
it might be at a frustration level, a frustration reading level, in the sense of, can you connect to it?
Right.
And I think for a lot of people, it's like, yeah, this wasn't interesting. I didn't get it. It's stressful to read. Or even if it was interesting, there's, you know, some kind of theme that's hard to deal with. And, I mean, I don't know if everybody does it the same way. I did like to read a lot of them, but there were, like I said with Knight, there were certain ones that I'm like, this is upsetting me, so I'm just going to find out what happened so I can pass the quiz.
Right, and I feel like I did that as well with, I'm going to say especially books like The Awakening and Madame Bovary. So The Awakening, to me, when I read it in high school, I hated it. I didn't understand the complexities of what it meant to be a woman in society at the time. And I didn't understand just how someone can feel so trapped in their own body because of society that their only choice, spoiler alert, just anybody, their only choice is to take their own life because they feel as though there's no other option. But then I went back and read The Awakening in graduate school, and the language is stunningly beautiful. The book reads as if it's
an ocean. I haven't read that one.
It's an ocean wave. And as much as I don't personally agree with the choice the character made, having a better understanding of all the complexities of her choices and who she was made it so much richer to me. And I just, it's, I don't know. You said it perfectly. You hit the nail on the head when you said, instead of shoving these works down people's throats when they can't truly comprehend them, why not give them a taste of certain ones that you feel are best for not just their ability to take a test and, you know, write down a list of characters for a quiz, but also that they can understand and relate to, and then that will encourage them to then read others after that.
Of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I also want to say, like, you know, any teenagers that are listening, this is not at all to knock your intelligence level. There are teenagers who are brilliant. It's just that you perceive things differently when you look back. Mm-hmm. And certain ones of these, if maybe they focused on ones that have younger characters or that, like, you can more connect to for reasons like that, then some of these other ones, these more complex ones, you know, having as suggestions maybe when you're in college or, you know, book clubs can do them. Things like that, you know, people would be more apt to choose them themselves.
Right. And I think that the catch 22 here is that
another good book.
Yes. is that we want to make sure that students are prepared and having read certain things, because in everything is cumulative. And I know that in college, especially as an English major, professors made references to books that I read in high school, but had I not been exposed to that, I would have been the reference had been completely lost on me rather than only half lost on me, because I didn't 100% get what was going on in the novel when I read it. And now I had to play catch up and actually try to understand it then. But, right. No, it's interesting. I don't know. I don't know if there's a clear cut solution for it, but if you are a younger person listening to this, just know that someday you'll also look back on reading a lot of these books and you'll realize how important the lessons that they're hoping to impart upon you are in your life, or will be in your life. And I mean, push through them. There's some, I mean, Chelsea, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was some I just was like, why do I have to read this? It was like torture having to get through the language of it all.
And I think pushing kids through that kind of thing makes them less likely to pick up other books.
Right.
You know, it makes it more frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, yeah. But there is a lot you can get from these. And I do really like the dystopian types.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the ones – actually, I feel like a lot of the ones, like looking at this, that are some of my favorites are either dystopian or sci-fi. Well, like I know we talked Orwell a little bit, but like Animal Farm.
So good.
And I like how the whole thing is an allegory for political figures in the world at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But just like what can happen if things go unchecked.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic for that reason. Like Fahrenheit 451, like what happens if you censor?
Mm-hmm.
The Giver. What if we protect everyone so much from the bad things that there's no emotion whatsoever?
Mm-hmm.
Like some of these were like, these are the ones that to me jumped out. Maybe I just like this genre.
No, I loved The Giver growing up.
Giver's so great. So, you know, a lot like that. Also, Anthem. Did you read Anthem in high school?
I did not, no.
I'm not sure if, you know what, it might have been college, but I read it young. And it's short. It's like a little novella.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about individuality. And it's, again, in a futuristic world. So I guess this is a spoiler. Where there's no longer individuals. Like, everything is for the good of the whole.
Mm.
So they only use plural pronouns.
Right.
And the discovery of, wait, my truth might be different from your truth.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't make things wrong. So we're not the same we all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So just like kind of like the individual thought and the
right.
being your own person. Like I really liked that one a lot. So a lot of the ones that I think jumped out to me were that type.
I think that a lot of my favorites were also that type. I in addition, really love anything that's historical fiction.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been fascinated by history, but I think that books like, and again, spoiler alert, A Farewell to Arms by Ernest Hemingway. I think that one's particularly, I mean, whenever I think of it, it's always been particularly poignant because it's told during wartime. So you get a glimpse of what that was like, but it also talks about how tragedy isn't just a wartime thing, and that, losing someone or having someone either just gone from your life, whether it's through death or some departure of some sort, that happens to everyone. And that even individuals that are strong and survive the hardest of times, like a war, are still susceptible to just the human condition, and that we're all just regular people. And I think that that was one that hit me really hard growing up because I don't know, to me, it just felt unfair when a character survived an entire war and then got killed in childbirth. But that's also, it also taught me at a very young age. I read that and it's like, no one is safe from being human. And that includes all the good things and all the bad things.
Also the concept of there is not fair.
Right. There's not
the world's fair. Not fair. Like right. There's no, well, I did this, so this should happen. The world doesn't work like that.
No.
Just because you worked really hard or survived something doesn't necessarily mean you're gonna get whatever you wanted to get or whatever you thought was gonna happen next. Some people have better hand dealt to them than others, and that is just circumstances of when and where they were born.
Right.
It's really not because people did more work to get these circumstances. Now, some people did. There are definitely circumstances in the world where people came from less and worked their way up and earned more. But even the concept of that, it's, you know, that's amazing that it worked for them. But it doesn't necessarily mean that people who are struggling didn't work.
Exactly. And I think furthermore, I feel like a lot of the high school reading that I read, that sounded redundant, even though it's not, the high school literature that I read, I feel as though reading these books took me from, not in a bad way, but from childhood to young adulthood, because of some of the themes that they portray and because of some of the things that happen to characters, because you realize that, like you said, Chelsea, life is not fair. And sometimes books have sad endings. And not everything in life ends happy. It's not always a fairy tale. It's not a Disney movie. That sometimes when characters do everything they can, they fail. Mm-hmm. And
yeah. And also there's no like end of the movie. There's no like, no. Okay, now we got to the happy part, whatever.
No, it's, and I think that that's so genuine and beautiful and something that I don't think I really appreciated when I was reading them as a high school. I think I just got upset at how many people just decided, you know, the author is just going to kill off my character that I like.
Yeah.
But I think it also taught me that no matter who you are, we're all going to have struggles. We're all going to die at some point. And that no matter how old you are, we're all afraid of something. Something holds us back. And I think that I truly started to understand or try to understand what it meant to be an adult when I was reading these, because the adults in these books make good choices. They make bad choices. They make devastating choices. But so I kind of connected to that, because as a teenager, you're constantly feeling like you're doubting yourself. Your hormones are whacked. You're trying to navigate love and life and popularity and trying to fit in. And I think it's kind of cool to, even through certain long drawn out writings and authors that maybe are a little bit too wordy, like Hawthorne, love him, but a little too wordy, that they're all feeling those feelings, even as adults. Yeah. That doesn't go away.
Because adults don't magically have things figured out. They're just better at faking it.
Right. And it made me feel less alone growing
up. Yeah, for sure. I guess a book that popped into my head when you were saying all of that about how like bad things happen and that's just how it is, but then it's about like how you rise from them, was Little Women.
So good.
That popped into my head while you're saying that, because, all right, so major spoiler, like if you haven't read Little Women and want to, definitely skip this because it's like the big twist. So one of the sisters, Beth, dies in the story, and that is, you know, she's young, it's a devastating loss, and rather than be crippled by it, the protagonist uses it to kind of spur herself forward, and it helps her with her career and her life, and the fact that she was able to show strength in that kind of circumstance, I really appreciated that younger. Now, this was also a book that upset me a lot. But
But
I really appreciated that part of, you know, how that story worked that way. And also that it didn't follow the conventions of you need a partner to make you the person you are. Her whole thing is like she has to be the person she is first.
Right. And, again, another big spoiler, but there were so many critics of the novel, especially when it was first published, that there she has a child, the protagonist has a childhood friend that everybody sees as her perfect suitor, but that's not the person she ends up with. And at the time that was so radical.
But even that, like, and, it's not yeah. just the one love interest from the beginning that has to be your person. And honestly, over the course of your life, probably will have deep connections with more than one person.
Mm-hmm.
You probably will. You'll connect to someone when you're young. You'll connect to someone else a few years later. That's just how life works. And thinking that the first person is always the right person,
mm-hmm.
that's a dangerous thing too. Because often they're not. I mean, they might be. For some people, they are. But
right.
even the concept of, like, you need a person. One of the things I love about Josh, one of my favorite protagonists, is that she doesn't need someone to make her as strong as she is.
Mm-hmm.
She does that all on her own, and it's when she's strong that she actually finds someone who fits with her strong that she already is.
Right, exactly. She's a woman who has her own mind, who is absolutely not going to conform to what society dictates she do. And I mean, I love that aside from the ending of Little Women, that a lot of, I mean, Joe is based off of the author, Louisa May Alcott.
Yeah, which is amazing.
And she never married. But I mean, the influence that she's made and continues to make on young women and young men who read the book as well. But specifically, I know that you said Joe is one of your favorite fictional protagonists, and she's also one of mine. I just think that it just goes to show that even historically speaking, there are people that could make it on their own. They did not need to find that person. And I don't know.
It's stronger that it's a period piece.
Mm-hmm.
It's stronger that it is in a time where it was unheard of to not take a husband.
Right.
You know, it's not now. Now that's more of a normal accepted thing. I mean, people still get weird about it sometimes, but
yeah,
it's more normal to just not marry
mm-hmm.
if you don't want to. Or to wait until a later time
mm-hmm.
to do so. But at this time, that was not normal. And the defying expectations and the just being strong for yourself in the face of bad things happening and really truly like taking a look at what is right for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think the lessons from that one are some of my favorites.
Right. I agree. And I think another heroine who is similar to Jo March in that she certainly has her own mind and her own faults and failings too is Anne Shirley from Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah.
And I just recently re-listened to Anne of Green Gables, mm-hmm. Anne of Avonlea, and Anne of the Island. And
I need to reread them sometime.
They're really good. And anybody that, again, spoiler alert, anybody that has read them or has seen one of the series knows that Anne does end up marrying her childhood chum, as she would say, Gilbert Blythe. But it is not as easy as, you know, this is the person I'm going to be with forever. I love that Ellen Montgomery made sure that Anne had moments of indecision where she wanted to figure out herself and find who she was before. And she frequently said that she was never going to marry. And, you know, just the idea of a woman, again, in a period piece at that time, being able to say, you know, maybe I don't want to. That was huge.
Yeah.
And
another just in general lesson with that is, you know, it kind of pops the bubble of it's supposed to just be magical and perfect, like the Disney thing.
Mm-hmm.
A good relationship is not magical and perfect.
Mm-mm.
It is people working together through, sometimes things are wacky, but like they work well together and they make each other stronger through the times that are not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like now all my problems are gone. No.
No, not at all.
It's really not. And I like when literature portrays it in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because even like the best person for you is not going to be 100% blissful all the time. It's just, that's just not real.
Exactly. It's not reality. And that's one thing that, I mean, taking away all of the negative sides of having read these novels before, maybe we were able to truly have a sense of, I feel like I'm going to say true and truly in one sentence, and that doesn't make sense, but just the level of comprehension, is that at least, if nothing else, they gave us that picture of that humans are so flawed, and that even stories that have quote unquote happy endings, like A Great Expectations, for example, like there is some awful stuff that happens in between, and that none of the relationships are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the literature that stands the test of time is written in such a way that the relationships aren't.
Right.
Even within families, friends, et cetera.
For sure. The ones that touch on like the human condition
mm-hmm.
are the ones that I think stick with me. And then there are lots of different little subgenres of high school literature. Then you get into all of the Shakespeare stuff too.
Oh my gosh, yeah, of course.
And a lot of those do have important themes as well. They're written more in a more period language, I guess. So they're a different
mm-hmm. No, you're thing right.
entirely to try to comprehend. I always liked them, I think, because I like plays. And, you know, they're written out in that kind of sense, and you can kind of envision the whole thing in like how the stage directions would be.
Mm-hmm.
So I always like them for that sense. But those touch on important themes too. They're just might be a little bit harder to grasp all of the language for. So, you know, those touch on things like, you know, jealousy, like with Othello.
Right.
And just like how damaging that is. Or
yes. Lust for power, Macbeth.
Yes, lust for power. Or
yeah,
like Romeo and Juliet. How about like don't get caught up in stupid infatuation?
Right. And they're
literally they know each other for like a week.
They do. And they're young. They're
like, yeah, you know what? We get it. Falling in love is awesome and exciting. It also like you need to actually put it in perspective of the world, though.
Right.
They're just so young. And like the damages of not taking things in the context of the world that you're in.
Oh, yeah.
Like I don't see them as this big amazing love story. They're teenagers who made a mess of things because they weren't thinking clearly.
Right. And their families were completely blind to it all. Like,
yeah.
Talk about bad parenting. but no, to go on the same front as that, I mean, we have Shakespeare, of course, but then we have other things that, I mean, I think of other works that are more difficult to read because they're either in poetic form or lyrical form, or like I'm thinking Iliad and the Odyssey.
Yes.
I'm thinking Beowulf, like those kind of things. Like
those are harder to read. And those are things that I think you read early on in high school.
I remember I went back and I read the Seamus Heaney translation, which came out after we were in high school, of Beowulf. And Seamus Heaney did a wonderful job with his translation and it made it much clearer. But even with his translation, it's still, that is a tough read.
I think if I'm remembering correctly, Iliad and Odyssey, I think that was freshman year.
I was going to say it was either my freshman or sophomore year. And that's...
Sure it was freshman year because I remember the classroom I was in, mm-hmm. which I was also in junior year. But I'm pretty sure, I don't think it was junior year. I think it was either freshman or sophomore year, and I was in a different classroom for English sophomore year.
Right.
Because I remember a project that I did about it and where I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure that was freshman year. So, like, okay, Odyssey, freshman year.
That's just ridiculous.
These kids are 14.
And if you're lucky at 14, and this is someone, and again, we are not insulting your intelligence if you're a young listener. We know that you're intelligent. There's just so much that both of us were scholarly individuals when we were your ages. But
yeah.
I think about how I read the Odyssey as a kid and now, and then versus now. And like the most you get out of it is that it's a big adventure. Like,
yeah. It's going on a trek.
Yeah, just going on an adventure.
And there are some sirens. They sing pretty and then he goes there. Like,
There's a big whirlpool. It's called Charybdis. Like, you know, like, you don't.
Yeah. But like how everything has a deeper meaning you don't necessarily grasp. And it's just like, we're supposed to have them read this.
Or even when I think about the scene with Penelope and all the suitors.
Yeah.
That's just, I think that when you're a kid, you're just like, oh, wow, she must be really pretty. She has all these guys. And it's like, no, they have been stalking her and living in her area for this long until she picks one. Like, that's.
Yeah, it's stressful.
It's so stressful. No, I was just thinking, going back to your Shakespeare thing, like, even dissecting, I remember as a kid, I say kid, I mean young adult, but.
It's fine.
It was just, even dissecting that, the very famous, if you're thinking Shakespeare, like, when you hear the line, to be or not to be, or when you hear, wherefore art thou, Romeo, like. Mm-hmm. Like, just dissecting that language as a 14, 15-year-old and then being like, oh, okay, I guess I get it. But you don't really get it until later.
For real, yeah.
For 100%.
And they do have important themes.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
But the language gets in the way. And I think it's important to teach that, but maybe not all the Shakespeare's.
Yeah, maybe not right away. Because there are also certain things that again, I'm going to preface this by saying that I don't think that teenagers don't have life experience to the point that, I mean, there are some things I would hope that teenagers wouldn't have the same extent of life experience as an adult would. But it's naive to say that not everybody does. But there are just certain concepts and things that happen in life that you don't get at that age.
Mm-hmm.
Or you don't truly understand to the level that is necessary to really get a good reading of the novel or play or book or poem. So there's that too.
I also think it's interesting, maybe not so much by high school, but all through school, what they shelter kids from and what they let them read and see.
Oh my gosh.
It doesn't make sense to me why shelter certain things and not other things. I don't get it. Like, for example, the big thing that they shelter, and I mean, it's occasionally in high school stuff, but even then it's like a thing. The big thing that they shelter is, like, they don't want you to read or watch sex scenes. Right? That's like a huge thing that they like to shelter at that age.
In a big.
But you can read about, like, everybody killing each other in wars and, like, in the Holocaust and violence and kids eating each other.
Yeah.
You can read all of this stuff, and this is, like, okay, it's child appropriate, but, like, you can't read a sex scene?
Or, oh my god, I just am thinking one specific scene in Lord of the Flies, and it's like,
yeah,
if you're okay with that, and you can't be open to the fact that, like, we're not talking, like, pornographic sex scenes, but, like, my goodness.
No.
If that's what you're worried about, and you're giving us, I mean...
I remember it was a huge deal that there was the one sex scene in 1984.
Yeah.
And that was, like, a huge thing. But for real, like, why are we sheltering certain things and not others? Because in the grand scheme of the real world, and, you know, maybe not at that particular point in their lives, but in the grand scheme of the real world, pretty much, I mean, there are some exceptions, pretty much everybody's going to eventually have sex. They're not all going to eat each other. I would hope not. You're not going to kill each other. They're not all going to be in wars.
Yeah.
But, like,
I mean,
in the scheme of, like, what is more appropriate to your life?
I remember being shocked because, I mean, there were certain books that we had permission slips for going home. But I remember one of them was The Crucible. And it wasn't the thing we had the permission slip for was that they wanted to make sure that parents knew that there was some type of attraction or adultery or something happening between two of the characters.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, like, they're literally hanging people.
Right?
They're hanging,
like, people. Why is that and more appropriate?
I'm like, I don't understand.
Like, sure, you want to, like, rate the whole thing, like, a higher level of, like, you need to be older or, like, you need permission, fine, because it includes all of the things, but not just, like, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Or, I mean, like, God forbid, I know that there's, like, two others that I'm thinking of that I know that in The Grapes of Wrath, that there is a scene that describes a woman, one of the main characters, breastfeeding. And that was like, oh my God, we can't have kids see that. And it's like, really?
But like, we can read Night.
The whole book, we're seeing people in dire poverty, like people literally dying of starvation. And, you know,
but breastfeeding, this is, you know, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no, there's a nipple.
I mean, the same thing with, and again, that this is a more shaky topic of discussion, but I still think it's relevant that people want to ban certain books because they use certain language that was used and commonplace during the time that the setting is.
Like,
and
I feel like that's Finn? Just
exactly what I'm thinking of. But that's just erasure. Like, if you're just taking away history, if that's, we're not telling our kids, like, usually when kids are reading that, they're like, I don't even want to read this word because
it's. And the thing is, you need to know how things were. Like, erasing how people spoke to each other, it's kind of like calling a concentration camp, like, summer camp.
Yeah.
And, like, that is not okay.
I mean,
that's not what it was.
History's not here to be sugarcoated. It's here to inform our present and teach us something. And if we keep on erasing it or refuse to allow students to read books that show them what things were like, then we're doomed to repeat the same mistakes that we did before. It's just, I definitely needed a permission slip for The Grapes of Wrath, but I didn't need one for Invisible Man, which I'm pretty sure, if memory recalls, again, spoiler, has an entire scene where someone's chopping up a body.
Yeah, that's not okay.
Like, yeah.
And I mean, you know, fine. If it's, you know, they're teenagers, you can expose them to things. But why some and not others?
Yeah.
Like, if you want it to be, like, nothing that would be above a PG movie in general, fine.
You don't have much to go on there. Even To Kill a Mockingbird is not on that list.
To Kill a Mockingbird's not at all on that list. But...
Mm-hmm.
Like, if they were going to do it, like, evenly, blanket that way, that's one thing. But if they're going to, like, pick and choose things that are not the worst things, I don't know. I just don't get that part of the culture. Why that's such a horrible thing. Because in the grand scheme of life, that is more relevant than all the horror. I mean, the horror is important in terms of knowing not to do it, but...
Yeah.
Really, like, most people aren't walking around with, like, I really think I want to kill somebody today. But you will be walking around thinking you want to have sex at some point. Gonna happen.
This is very true.
But very killing true. People? No, no.
No, no, no. I also think it's interesting that I feel like certain individuals feel like that some types of death are okay to portray in books, but they're like, oh, my child would be scarred. When I remember someone complaining in when I was growing up that the teachers in my sixth grade class let us read Johnny Tremaine because Rab died. And it's like, are you serious? Mm. Like, it's the Revolutionary War. People died like on both sides. But the same parent was totally okay with the awakening later on because it didn't explicitly say that the person killed herself, even though she did. Like,
right.
Like, there's, I don't know.
A lot of things are scarring for all different reasons.
Like, I mean, Chelsea knows this, but I've lost, well, one family member when I was growing up and then two other individuals who I was friends with to suicide. And, you know, that was always a really difficult topic for me to read, but I wouldn't have wanted anybody to leave it out of my reading list.
Right.
So.
Although, I do think, and just to play devil's advocate, I absolutely agree that, like, it's important. I think that the volume of disturbing things maybe needs to be less. Because for me, that was when I started, and I read. I like reading. That was when I would start to skim when it was upsetting me.
Mm-hmm.
Because also, you know, teenagers aren't necessarily as resilient to these kinds of things. I also didn't watch Game of Thrones at all until this year. Because when I tried to watch season one, and I was 23, 24. Like, I was not a baby. Just where I was in my life, I'm like, there's too much violence. Not the nudity, the violence. That was upsetting.
Yeah, the nudity is like,
I mean, and there's a lot of that too in Game of Thrones, but that's not scarring. The violence is. So, like, I mean, I did watch all of it. It was good. I just didn't watch it until this past year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, also, like, you know, knowing, like, how much are we going to put on the kids to take in at once?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just interesting food for debate.
Oh, for sure. No, I mean, there are certain things that I kind of wish I hadn't, you know,
mm-hmm.
that I hadn't read at a certain age.
Right.
Or that, like, just wasn't necessary. Like, you mentioned when you were reading Night that you read the first chapter and then you had to read the Cliff Notes at that point because it was too disturbing. Like, my parents said that they remember walking in on me reading it on the couch and sobbing. Like I was inconsolable because I just couldn't understand why someone would do that to another person. And my brain didn't have the ability to compartmentalize what I was reading.
Right. And that's something that we need to take into account. Like, what are the limits? And it's important for mm-hmm. kids to realize how bad these things were in the past, but like, what are the limits of how are we affecting their emotional state?
Right. Yeah.
Lot to think about with high school books.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they're books that are popular in high school reading lists. I don't know that I'd even call them high school books though, because really they're adult books.
Mm-hmm. Let's like conclude on some of these quotes that are for sure favorites and probably multiple people's favorites. There might even be some listeners who can say, oh yes, this quote really hit me hard when I was reading it, or it's one that I continue to think about as I continue my path of life and all of that. But there's some that I thought were particularly interesting in the context of talking about lessons learned.
Awesome. So. Okay. So we're going to go through this list. You know, just giving full credit, Kayla made this list. So they're great quotes. I didn't make this list. So I don't want to take credit for it because, you know, she did a lot of good work. Anyway.
Thank you.
We did mention this quote earlier in the episode, but who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past, from 1984. And I think there's just so much truth in that. And that's sort of the pay attention to where you're getting your information from.
Mm-hmm.
And don't just believe everything you hear.
Absolutely. And then next, we definitely touched upon the novel and we mentioned the author, but from Louisa May Alcott's Little Women, we have, "I am not afraid of storms, for I am learning how to sail my ship." And I think that's something that applies to everybody, but especially to teenagers. I think that a lot of teenagers can really relate to that quote, because really at that point in your life, you are learning to become who you eventually will grow to be. Mm-hmm. You're learning what truly matters to you, what your values are and what your strengths and weaknesses are. And I think that, you know, going forward in life, not being afraid that there will be storms, but just knowing that you're learning how to steer through them is important.
Right. And knowing that the bad things are going to happen, accepting that they're going to happen, and building up kind of an arsenal of tools that help you get through those.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool. All right. Next quote is, "You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb inside of his skin and walk around in it." And that is by Harper Lee in To Kill a Mockingbird. I love mm-hmm. that quote. I know that you love that quote because you kind of wrote a novel around that quote.
I did.
Which I know we've mentioned before, but if you've not read Kayla's novel, you should read it. It's called Someone Else's Shoes, and it's kind of built around this quote. Anyway, just plug. I just got a plug.
Thank you.
But I love this because it's really empowering to understand that everyone's reality is slightly different. And mm-hmm. because I experienced something one way, that doesn't mean that you've experienced it that way. And I think at a young age, we tend to get stuck in our own experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not until we see people who do things differently, you know, cultures that are different, families who operate differently, you know, different groups of people who just don't experience things the way you do, that we sort of realize how diverse the world is. And the more you can understand about these other people, the better you're going to be able to not only like enrich yourself, but to communicate with people who are of all different walks of life.
Yes, I 100% agree. And thank you for the shameless plug for my book.
It's a great book.
One of my favorite quotes of all time, and something that's so important to consider in adulthood, but also as you're growing up, whether you're a child, young adult, adult.
Right.
So kind of an interesting segue. Yes. This next one by Hemingway, who, you know, as a writer is incredibly, he's a realist, he's cynical. And this is found in his book, A Farewell to Arms. This is a rather sad quote, but I still think one that's important, and I'll go into why. But the quote is thus: if people bring so much courage to this world, the world has to kill them to break them. So of course it kills them. The world breaks everyone, and afterward many are strong at the broken places. But those that will not break, it kills. It kills the very good and the very gentle and the very brave impartially. If you are none of these, you can be sure it will kill you too, but there will be no special hurry. And clearly that's a very sad statement on the world. But I like two parts of it. One, that even though it is incredibly, the sentiment is truly depressing and disheartening, it's also very realistic in that we all are born and live and breathe and fight and work and love and die. And that no matter who you are, that's going to happen to everybody. And I think that's an important thing to note and an important thing to understand even as a teenager growing up, because teenagers face a lot of adversity and pain growing up. There are teenagers who lose family members, friends, and knowing that you're not alone in that loss and that that's part of the human condition is important. But my favorite part of the quote overall is the world breaks everyone and afterward many are strong at the broken places. And I think that that really, amidst this really depressing quote and the sentiment, that there's like this glimmer of hope, and that humans are so strong that even at their broken places, they learn to become more strong, and their brokenness makes them more relatable and more themselves.
Love it.
So
that quote reminds me of the quote from Hamilton. The one they do it a couple times and they change the first word. At one point it's life, at one point it's love, and at one point it's death.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the life doesn't discriminate between the sinners and the saints.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say that love doesn't discriminate and death doesn't discriminate.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, it really reminds me of that, in that, you know, the world happens to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not who you are and did you deserve it. It's how you move on.
Mm-hmm.
Our next quote is, for a friend with an understanding heart is worth no less than a brother. And that's from the Odyssey. Love this. I can't remember where in the Odyssey this was in context, but the quote itself, I think that it's really important to look at the people in our lives and our friendships and our any type of relationship with different people in our lives as worthwhile. I think often we categorize people, not necessarily intentionally, but that anybody who is there for you and can understand you and can listen to you has value and is, I like that, is worth no less than a brother, and that they are important, they're a close part of you, a close part of family. And you don't have to actually be technically related.
That's why it's one of my favorites. And I think that it's one that would probably resonate with a lot of students who are young adult learners, because not everybody has that picture perfect cookie cutter family.
Most don't.
And knowing that having a friend that's a true kindred spirit, an understanding heart, is just as much a big part of shaping who you are and who you'll become as someone who's a blood relation.
For sure.
And that sometimes our friends are more of our family than our family. And that's okay. And that family is found, the word family in a broad sense of the term is found in all different places.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
Next, I have one that we didn't talk about this book. It's one that I actually read in its original French. But this is from The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. And this is probably one of the most famous quotes from The Little Prince. It's quoted quite frequently, and I feel as though it's a quote that has also been paraphrased, and people have used it in that way too. But in any case, and now here is my secret, a very simple secret. It is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. And I think that that's so important. It's a lesson important as you're growing up. It's one that's important to remember as an adult, that the most important things in our lives are the people that we love, like love, honesty, integrity, passion. They're things that we can't see. Like you can't just look and see like that's love, or you can't look and see like that's passion. It's really what we can't see that becomes the cornerstones of what and who we become. And I think that's so important. Material things are not the most important thing.
For
It's
sure.
the things that we can't see and touch.
Awesome. I love that. Okay, our next quote is, "Life is to be lived, not controlled, and humanity is won by continuing to play in face of certain defeat." That's Ralph Ellison, Invisible Man. And that quote, I love the part about playing in face of certain defeat. Because there are times in life when everybody is going to feel like, what is the point? There might be more extreme cases than others. Some people might really feel like this is the end. Some people might go through things that are horrific and not know how to bounce back from. Or it could be just something that is challenging for you. But at some point, we're all going to face something that is hard to get through. And in order to get to a better place, you just have to keep on going. It's like the just keep swimming. And the life is to be lived, not controlled. Yeah. So, like, making sure that you are experiencing the things in your life and just moving along. It's like, for some reason, my head is doing like that. And even when your hope is gone, move along, move along.
Yeah.
That's the song that's happening in my head right now, because things turn into songs in my head. That's the song that quote reminded me of. It's a throwback to 2000s, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably maybe a 2005-ish song.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I'm just, ballparking, guessing when that is. But yeah, I like that. For that reason, because it's like sometimes you just gotta keep going.
And I think that this quote is particularly, it hits hard for me as an adult, rereading it. I loved it for the reasons that Chelsea gave when I was growing up as a teen, but I also almost see it as a guiding light, almost a lighthouse for myself, because life is to be lived, not controlled. And I feel like so many people just want to be able to control everything. And if they can just make this one thing happen, then they'll be happy, then they'll be able to move on. But life is to be lived, it's to be experienced, it's to be it, you know, you're
It's the
steering your
journey.
ship in the storms. It's a journey, and you can't control it all the time. And because you can't, that's okay. That's not
Yeah.
something that's a detriment to you.
Experience the moment that you're in.
Yep.
Don't try to make it something else.
So speaking of things that hit real hard, especially in context,
Ah, yes.
the next quote is an Elie Wiesel quote, of course, the author of Night. And the quote is, "One person of integrity can make a difference." And of course, in context, we're talking about individuals. He lived through, experienced life as an individual who went to a concentration camp during the Holocaust. And all I can think of with this quote is Oskar Schindler, and just how important it is to, even amidst a group of individuals who appear to be in power, or appear to be, I don't know, I just think I'm losing my words and I'm not being articulate, but this quote just means so much to me,
Yeah.
because one act of kindness or integrity can make such a difference. And I think that we hear stories of Holocaust survivors and people who have survived other atrocities. And oftentimes it's because there was one person of integrity that was helping individuals, even if that person wasn't being personally affected by what was happening. And I think that if you learn that at a young age, you'll be certainly better off for it.
And I think it's also almost like a call to action in a sense that, like, if you can do something, you don't know the level that that tiny thing could affect someone. And so just trying to live the best that you can for the world around you. You never know. Like, a little tiny thing, a little, like, let me help you with that bag. You never know.
And to that point, it, like you said, it is like a call to action for even like simple tasks and things that might seemingly be small to you. But I mean, putting it in a high school context, stand up to bullies. You know, don't let individuals tear down someone who doesn't have as strong of a voice or who can't defend themselves and have the integrity to make the choice that's the right choice, even if it's not always easy.
High school stuff like that, but
it is
checking in with yourself and what feels right, what feels like it has integrity. Awesome. I love that. So the next quote is, maybe everybody in the whole damn world is scared of each other. And that is John Steinbeck of Mice and Men. I love that because it, again, has to do with not understanding other people's positions in life. And if somebody is different than you, not necessarily assuming one thing or another. And if people are assuming things, then everybody's afraid of somebody they don't need to be afraid of. And I think, to me, this quote basically tells me, just learn as much as you can and be as open and as welcoming as you can to as many people as possible.
I agree with you. I think that this quote calls me to be an individual who seeks to understand people who are different. Because oftentimes that fear goes away. That whole damn world who is scared will be a lot less scared if we seek to understand each other.
And a lot of fear is just not knowing. The more you get to know a person or a place or a group or something, the less scary it's going to be. Even if it doesn't end up being your favorite thing, it's going to be less scary. So, you know, let people in. I like that.
So this next quote really, really plays a role in being powerful when it's in context. The quote I have, "And So It Goes," which is a quote that was paraphrased by Kurt Vonnegut Jr., Slaughterhouse-Five, but the author, Kurt Vonnegut, consistently says the quote, "So It Goes, So It Goes," in his novel Slaughterhouse-Five. And it's really a phrase that is meant to understate a lot of the tragedy and horrifying things that the protagonist has seen and done. And I think that on one hand, it's so sad that oftentimes we're reduced to needing to just fake it till we make it. But I think one of the reasons I liked this quote so much is that I was someone who growing up did fake it till I made it sometimes. And to see a character who was doing the same thing in the face of horrors, just to try to be okay, it was one of those that made me feel less alone. That sometimes all of us have to do that. And in the face of horror, sometimes you have to fake it till you make it, until you're okay again, until you can find a way to heal yourself. And this kind of is, it's some people say it's a throwaway line, but I don't think so. It's a line that repeats itself because the protagonist is speaking about all these negative things that are happening, chiefly the firebombing of Dresden. But at the end of the day, it's something that happened, and the protagonist has to either choose to let it bury him or move on.
I like that quote because it also reminds you not to get complacent about the negative things in life. And one example just in the real world that reminds me of is, unfortunately, how many school shootings have there been?
Right.
Can you name them all? Do you know the most recent one?
I don't.
No, I don't either. The first few, sure. Everybody remembers. You know where you were. It was a huge thing. But they happen so much that I feel like we've kind of adapted this sort of mindset. Like, yeah, well, that's what happens. And it's important to not do that.
Right.
All right. So this next one, I actually, to be honest, have not read this next book that it's from, but I can read the quote and say what I think it means to me. So the next quote is, "Love is or it ain't. Thin love ain't love at all." And that's Toni Morrison, Beloved. So I think just reading the quote, that's basically saying, like, you know or you don't know. Like, if you don't know, it's not real. And if you say, if you're in, like, be all the way in, don't be halfway in. And not necessarily just with love, not, like, in terms of, like, romantic love. I think it can be expanded to anything that, like, all right, you're committing to this, go all the way. So the thin love ain't love at all. Like, if you're only, like, halfway in, like, yeah, okay, love this person, place, group, whatever. But, like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of be whatever about it. Then you're not showing love.
Yeah, the song that it makes me think of is, there's a quote from a song, and I'll have to, I think it's Chasing Cars, when it says, "Those three words are said too much."
Oh, yes, that is Chasing Cars, and I love that line.
And it's just speaking to the fact that love in its truest form, whether it's a familial love or a romantic love or a love between friends or a love of community or individuals, that you can't, pardon my language, but you can't half-ass love. Love is either love or it's not.
Yeah.
And
like, you can't be a little bit in love.
Right.
You're either in love or you're not in love. And you can't say that if it's, you know, if it's not like the in love type of love, but if it's like saying that you love a group or you love an environment or something, but you kind of don't really treat it well, well, then you don't. It's like, get all the way in or get all the way out.
Agreed. So this next one is fairly simple. I don't know how much we need to dig into it, but it does come from the Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. And the quote is, "Human beings can be awful cruel to one another." And
they can.
I think that's just so honest. They can. And that is made manifest in wars, in, you mentioned school shootings, in how we treat people that are different than we are. Human beings can be awful cruel to one another. And I believe that Huck is saying this in response to seeing the feuding families, I believe, if my memory is serving correctly.
But I think so.
Yeah, just like the death that he's seeing, just because people are in an argument, and just the cruelty that you can see humans doing to one another. And I think that this is just an important one that you need to learn as a teenager, because it's true.
Yeah.
And it's sad, but it's true.
No, I agree with that. And it's pretty straightforward, but it's very true.
Yeah.
All right. So the next one, I guess, is also straightforward in a sense. And this quote is, "I have been bent and broken, but I hope into a better shape." And that's Charles Dickens' Great Expectations. And I love that because it's showing how, like, things happen to us and they affect us and they hurt us and they break us sometimes. But it's those things that change us the most. Those things that rip us apart. You know, the broken and bent. You need to go through the things in your life that are difficult in order to get to the things that are good. Not necessarily that it's always in that order, but I don't feel like I would be the same person I am now at all without some of the worst times in my life. It definitely changed who I am, and honestly, ultimately in a better way, you know, allowed me to be stronger in certain situations. And I think that that applies to everyone. You're going to go through something, if you haven't yet, that's going to mm-hmm. break you and change you. It's going to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be because of that experience that you're able to move forward.
And I think that you hit the nail right on the head when you said that, you know, something is going to happen to you in life,
mm-hmm.
whether it's happened already, whether it has yet to happen, everybody's going to face some type of trial, turmoil, sadness. Mm-hmm. And it's how we react to being bent and broken and how we grow into a new and better shape that defines us, not the negative things that happen to us.
Absolutely.
So next, I believe, I didn't even realize I put two Steinbecks in here, but two different books. Okay. But John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath, the following quote is penned: how can we live without our lives? How will we know it's us without our past? And I think that this is one of those quotes that's a double question that's so chilling, because I think it goes back to what we were talking about with history and the importance of knowing where we come from and what's happened, whether it's negative and positive, and the idea that human beings so crave to have to know where we come from and what we could accomplish and who our families are and what our history is, and that without it, we feel like we don't really have a sense of place or purpose. And I feel like everybody can relate to this. I mean, especially maybe a listener or a child who was maybe you're in foster care, or maybe you were adopted, or maybe you lost your parents or your caregivers young. But like that desire to want to know where you came from and how you became you is something that I think we all feel, even if we haven't lost someone in yeah. that way. So I think this is such an important quote, and that these are two very important questions. And I think that they're questions that really resonate with teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can't forget about where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the next quote, I love this.
Mm-hmm.
It takes something more than intelligence to act intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very big difference between being intelligent, like being book smart and knowing how to handle yourself in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to college, grad school, tons of schools for years and still have no idea how to do anything in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Education is great. I'm a big proponent of education. But education is not being smart.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a big difference. You could be a brilliant person with less education, or you could be a really not smart person with advanced degrees. And it has to do with how you experience the world and what you take in and how you learn, not just having intelligence.
I agree. And I think that what Dostoevsky's pointing out here is that the same thing as you mentioned, Chelsea, that there's a great deal of difference between having a high IQ or being intelligent or even being learned than, you know, having emotional intelligence or the ability to convey certain ideas and thoughts to others. That, you know, there are some incredibly, I'm sure that we've all experienced this. We've had teachers that we've loved, but we've also had teachers that have been incredibly smart, but can't teach us.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a difference between being able to impart.
Teaching is a whole different skill than knowing the topic. It's a totally different thing.
Right. Right. So, I mean, teaching as a teacher, you really are acting intelligently. You're trying to convey certain messages and themes and concepts to students. And there are certain intellectuals who cannot do that because there is a difference between intelligence and acting intelligently.
There absolutely is. All right.
So we have three more. So my next one is a quote from I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. And it's, words mean more than what is set down on paper. It takes the human voice to infuse them with shades of deeper meaning. And I think that's absolutely true. I think that especially in reference to rhetoric and how words are said and in what context they're placed in. But I think at the core of this is that words have power, and how we express ourselves and how we use our words can have a huge impact on those around us, ourselves, and our society. And I think that's something that cannot be forgotten. And the sooner you learn this as a young adult, the sooner you'll be able to apply it. And just knowing that your words have power, what you say will impact what others say and what others do, and how they perceive you.
And I also think it is important to note that how you say things makes a difference. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the whole, well, it's not what you said, it's how you said it, like, that sounds mm-hmm. silly for people to get upset about. No, that's a real thing.
Tone.
Your tone. Your tone makes a difference. Your inflection mm-hmm. makes a difference. Your cadence makes a difference. Mm-hmm. Everything that you use when you speak to put life into your voice, mm-hmm. or even when you're writing, the choice of words that you're using, the structure, the crap, the connotation of it, it all changes the meaning. This kind of reminds me of, like, why you shouldn't have a serious conversation in text messages.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Like, really, if it's a real thing, just call them. If it's like, hey, you want to get pizza, fine. But mm-hmm. if it's like, I need to talk to you about this important thing, mm-hmm. don't text.
Absolutely, and I think you make an excellent point with tone and inflection and everything. I mean, I think back at listening to some of my favorite presidential speeches of all time, and one of the things that comes to mind is the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And just like mm-hmm. that has such a deeper meaning than the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. You know what I mean?
It's the cadence, it's the pauses, it's the pace, mm-hmm. it's the rhythm. Yeah. So
yes,
what you say matters, but how you say it matters even more.
And how you say it matters. Mm-hmm.
Next one. Anyone with gumption and a sharp mind will take the measure of two things, what's said and what's done. Okay, I think this is like a fancy action speak louder than words. Oh, this is from Beowulf, by the way. I think this is sort of like an action speak louder than words. You can say something, but if what you do doesn't line up with what you say, then is it worth anything? And I like that it's pointing out that anyone with gumption and a sharp mind, like, it's things that you need to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. And I like that it says it'll take measure of two things, that you listen and comprehend what's said, but then you go beyond that. You also see what's done. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like how people are more willing to follow a leader who's willing to not just say that he or she will do something, but also that do what he or she says that they want others to do.
Right. How, what you say matters, how you say it matters, but what you do
mm-hmm.
matters even more.
Yep.
Last one.
So I love this one. This is from Dante's Inferno. And the quote is, "Do not be afraid. Our fate cannot be taken from us. It is a gift." And this one I kind of put on the list because it makes me think, in even now, in a big way, that I'm almost conflicted as to whether or not I'm like, yeah, or I'm like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. Because anytime the word fate is put into something, I'm always like, but what about free will?
Fate's a weird concept. But, we should do a whole thing on fate, actually, at one point.
We should. That would be a great episode.
Yeah. Coming soon.
Coming soon. Fate versus free will.
No, for real. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah. But in any case, I think that what I take most from this is that our fate of being human, being present and being here is a gift that we should not waste, and it cannot be taken from us. So the fact that you were born and you are here has power in and of itself, is how I like to take it.
Yeah.
And it can be read in many different ways. Dante has been read in so many different ways. Yeah. But that's how I take it. So fear not, because you're fated to be who you are and where you are. And that has power.
Yeah, it's interesting. It does read sort of as fatalistic, like your life has already been planned out.
Yeah.
Which I don't really believe in fate in that sense.
No.
So, like, do not be afraid. Our fate cannot be taken from us. It is a gift. on first glance sounds like, well, it's already written out. It's just going to happen to you. So don't worry, because it's either going to be good or bad and you can't change it.
Right.
It's kind of like, whatever, throw your hands up. But I think you can also take it as how you said that you were given a life to live. I mean, your life can be taken from you, I guess.
Yes.
But maybe your existence can't. Maybe your existence on a higher plane.
Right.
So that's an interesting one. And I definitely want to do a fate versus free will thing soon.
I think it would be fun. I always love talking fate versus free will and everything in between and philosophy and ethics and everything.
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time.
Tune in. All right, cool. So a lot to think about. We kind of threw a ton at you. High school.
We did.
High school literature. Lessons. What we learned then versus what we know now. How we can take the themes and apply them to life. Some of our favorite books. But yeah, I think that it's a lot to think about. And whether or not you've read all those books, hopefully some of those lessons can still resonate with you.
Mm-hmm. And also, whether or not you liked all these books, I'm sure some of the lessons will resonate as well. Because sometimes it's the things we hated that give us a lot of information to think about. But in any case, we are so happy to have the privilege of talking to you about all these wonderful intellectual topics now in the Roaring Twenties.
Yeah.
And we're so excited to have this new year be all about new experiences and new things to learn. And we can't wait to keep talking to you.
Yeah. So we've been talking to you for, it's going to be almost 2 years. So it's been, you know, it's been great to have this outlet and be able to share all these ideas. And, you know, we would love to hear your ideas of different things that you would like to hear us talk about. We'll keep coming up with new things and, you know, maybe some fun guests and things like that coming soon. We haven't had a guest in a while.
Great. We haven't had guests in a while, and I feel like they bring so much podcast.
We'll have to do another one with guests soon. In any case, let us know ideas for topics, what you want to hear about, things that if you want to try to, like, stump us, like, I don't think you guys know about this. Do it. We like to learn new things.
We do.
I guess have a fantastic week. Maybe pick up a book that could have fun lessons in it. Take a look, see what you can get out of it at this point in your life. And we will talk to you again next week.
We can't wait. Happy New Year, and thanks so much for listening.
Thanks again for joining us this week on the Sapio Files. Happy 2020, and we're excited to be back for another year providing you fun and exciting podcast episodes. As always, if you would like to weigh in, leave a comment, suggest a topic, or tell us a little about you, you can find us at sapiofilespodcast@gmail.com, on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, or on Apple Podcasts, the iTunes Store, or anywhere that you listen to this podcast. Have a fantastic week. Happy 2020, and always stay curious.